You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour one on this Wednesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. Stay a while if you can. You can watch on Peacock. That's our TV partner. You can do it for free. Download the app. Also, you can listen on our great radio affiliates around the country. We're over 370 cities around the country and the formidable Fox Sports Radio lineup. We have a play of the day, stat of the day, poll question, all of that coming up. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com. Logically, we shouldn't be surprised that the Ohio State-Michigan game was canceled, right? We all know what's happening around the country and college campuses, and Michigan has been hit as hard as any state, and also that college campus as well. You know, this is just a reality. You know, this is a great rivalry. We want it to be played. It's been one-sided as of late, the Buckeyes winning 8 in a row, 15 of 16. But that doesn't mean that it's not entertaining or culturally significant, probably more so this year than in a long time. And Michigan was a big underdog. I told you a couple of weeks ago that my Big Ten source said, hey, you're going to hear this, whether it's true or not, but it's out there, or at least starting to leak out there, that Michigan, because of COVID and the fact they don't want to get embarrassed by Ohio State, and they wouldn't want Big Ten or, you know, Ohio State to play for the Big Ten championship. Just so you know, that is how this is being framed right now, and that the Michigan-Ohio State game was probably not going to be played. And as we found out, they're not going to play this game. And now the focus shifts to Ohio State. Is the Big Ten going to change their eligibility rules to let Ohio State play in the conference title game? Now, that means acknowledging that they were too rigid when all of this started. But if there was ever a time to admit your mistakes, it's this year. You know, the ACC just had a change in their schedule, making sure Clemson and Notre Dame are going to face each other, and each gets 2 weeks to prepare for the ACC title game. Now, that doesn't mean this is the end of the road for Ohio State's title chances, because let's face it, these conference championship games, they're just a money grab to begin with. Remember when they first started and I said, why are you doing this? And it was basically, this is just to make money for the conference. And then I thought, well, you do put some of your teams at risk of missing out on a bigger prize because they're going to play for a conference title game. And if they lose, then that would preclude them from playing in a bigger bowl game at the time, or maybe playing for a national championship. So here you have Ohio State. Ohio State doesn't have to play in the Big Ten title game. I mean, think about it. They don't. They're in the top four right now. Now, they base that off of knowing that they weren't going to play the Michigan game. So one more game against Iowa, Wisconsin, like who cares? And understand this, the college football Final Four, it's a TV show. That's what this is all about. I know we love to go, oh my gosh, that team has a chance to get into the Final Four. You know who gets in the Final Four? The marquee teams get into the Final Four because people show up to watch them. Notre Dame, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State. Ohio State doesn't have to play another game. Now, the only way they get squeezed out is if Florida would beat Alabama, Florida and Alabama would still be in the Final Four. If Clemson beats Notre Dame, and it's close, Clemson and Notre Dame are probably staying in because their resumes are better. Then Ohio State would be on the outside looking in. It was suggested, my Big Ten source that I talked to this morning, I said, can Ohio State schedule anybody? Let me give you the information that he gave me. Michigan had no choice with a spike this week. They were already done numbers-wise. Schools are waiting to see what happens with Purdue and Minnesota. If they can't play, then Ohio State could possibly play another team in the Big Ten this week. When Barry Alvarez, he's in charge basically of the Big Ten, but former Wisconsin head coach, athletic director, he made the statement last week about revisiting the rules about how many games you have to qualify to play in the Big Ten title game. He did that while Wisconsin was still alive in the race. They lost to Indiana last weekend. So they're no longer in the race. Ohio State possibly plays on the 19th versus Wisconsin to get another game. There's this chance that maybe that they're able to play another game here. But if I'm Ohio State, I just leave it up to the Big Ten to say, are we worthy to represent this conference and go into the Final Four. You don't have to play another game because you're already in the Final Four. I can understand if it's Texas A&M, because it was also pointed out to me, could Ohio State and Texas A&M play? And I checked with my source, and my source said, well, there's so many issues here. It sounds good in theory. It can't happen. And I said, buzzkill, as I texted him back. He goes, well, first of all, the testing that you have in the SEC is different than the Big Ten. Where are you going to play the game, and who's going to televise it? Because A&M, CBS, Fox would have the Ohio State game. They would have had Ohio State and Michigan. I don't know how you could pull this off. But that has been put out there. There's also the possibility they waive the six-game rule. But if I'm Ohio State, I don't care about the Big Ten title. I want to play for the national title. And if I know I can get in, and Alabama, I think, is a 15-point favorite against Florida. Assuming Alabama wins and wins comfortably, then it feels like Ohio State is, because Texas A&M is not going to be able to play this weekend. Can A&M get another game? And who can they play? This was a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, I think, where I said, if I'm A&M and I run into a scenario where I'm on the outside of the Final Four, I would call up BYU. Now, BYU just losing, but I don't know if there is a team that A&M could play that would help them leapfrog whoever else is going to be in there besides Ohio State. If you're Ohio State, I don't want to play A&M. I'm already in the Final Four. A&M needs to play me. Ohio State doesn't need to play Texas A&M. Maybe Ohio State, I mean, Ohio State is guaranteed of playing one more game. And, you know, depending on how they perform in that game, does that matter in the Final Four? And from what I'm told, my source said no. You're already there. The Michigan game was canceled. Let's say you play Wisconsin. Okay, so what? Okay, you win 45-7. Okay. It comes down to if Alabama would lose to Florida and close game, and Clemson beats Notre Dame, their resumes are better than Ohio State's or A&M. We'll talk to Andy Staples. He covers college football for The Athletic. Get his thoughts on all of this. I mean, this is moving. This is fluid because here we are on a Wednesday. Now, this isn't BYU and Coastal Carolina where they can go, hey, let's have a Tinder date and we'll meet you in Carolina. Okay. And they were able to do that. There's more moving parts. The bigger the program, the bigger the conference, there's more moving parts. Will you let Ohio State play a team they've already played before? Hey, let them play Nebraska, which would be kind of ironic. They started the season against one another. But I don't know if you're going to be able to shoehorn another game in there. And then you'll have the Big Ten, you know, championship weekend where all the teams get another game. If your team is able to field a team. And that's a big if right now for some of these programs. Other than that, everything's great in college football. It's all about adaptability here. I understand it. All right, McClubbity got a poll question. By the way, the headlines, the Ravens handled the Cowboys. Dez Bryant right before kickoff, test positive. Carson Wentz benched for Jalen Hurts. And your rankings were Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, A&M, Florida, Iowa State, and Cincinnati. McLevin, what's the poll question?
Okay, after what you said, are you okay with a 5-0 Ohio State team being in the Final Four? How do you think people would vote? Not giving information about whether Florida wins or anything like that. Just in principle, are you okay with an incomplete Ohio State resume? Not you, but what the audience thinks. Because I think there's going to be some backlash.
Yeah, I understand it because people are going to go, well, it's preferential treatment for Ohio State. Does Ohio State, and this goes back to the beginning of the Big Ten season, and, you know, my source said they're not going to be able to play probably more than six or seven games. Will you pass the eye test? That's how it was framed with Ohio State. That's exactly how this is playing out. Have they passed the eye test? Now, I would say no, they haven't, but we do know the history of Ohio State football. And because of that, that's what this is based on. You know, their previous seasons, talent that they have there. And I think that plays a large role in this. You know, it's, and it goes back to this is a TV show. If you say to the networks, hey, Iowa State's a great story. Cincinnati's a great story. Coastal Carolina's a great story. In March Madness, this is interesting. But even when Butler played Duke, like we watched, I don't know what the numbers were, but I think deep down we're going, oh, Butler's a cute story, but Duke's going to win. Well, they barely won. College football doesn't have that. College football is basically, I need the biggest names, biggest schools, biggest coaches, biggest stars, and everybody gets to jump into the deep end of the pool here. And that's what is happening here. Notre Dame brings eyeballs. Ohio State, Alabama, they bring eyeballs. Throw Clemson in there with Trevor Lawrence. You're going to do blockbuster numbers here. That's what this is all about. And it's not fair, but college football. Remember, college football would just say, you're number one and you're number two and you get to play for a title. College football used to have mythical national championships. Like, they didn't play each other. We're going to say you're the national champ. Didn't President Nixon anoint, was it Texas, the national champs one year?
Yep.
Yeah, sure. I mean, why not? That's why you have to understand college football. And it's hard to understand college football. Understanding college football is not understanding college football. Because you're like, wait, what are they doing? What are they not doing? Who's in? Who's out? Yes, Todd.
Imagine doing that in the NFL if the Patriots weren't able to play a couple games and they're 8-6. But because they're the Patriots and because of what they've done the past 20 years, we wink at those last two games where they could have either finished 10-6 or 8-8 and they get in over another team because it's the Patriots.
It's college football. It's big business. And, you know, you're going to alter your rules or requirements. And you could always hide behind the fact that, well, 2020, it's all about, you know, adapting with the pandemic. I understand all of that. But to me, this is a TV show. And if the College Football Committee can find a way to have Ohio State play, they will. Yes, Paul.
I would love to see maybe some type of left-out tournament. Teams like Miami and Coastal Carolina. USC's 4-0, and they could finish undefeated. And they're not going to have a say in the national title picture, which is weird to think a USC program could finish undefeated, and they're not within striking distance. Get about four of those teams together and just set up shop down at Coastal, down in Conway, and play a round robin or something.
Yeah.
Put it on TV.
I mean, I understand it, but it's too hard to do it with what is going on and trying to get teams to go and play someplace. Can you have one place where they go? Can it be the other four, the final four, and then the other four or the next four, and then they get a chance to play? But you have bowl games, and I don't know how many bowl games are going to be played. That's another thing to factor in as well. But we'll talk to Andy Staples about that. Paul Feinbaum will join us coming up a little bit later on. The national political correspondent for NBC News, Steve Kornacki. He was on Football Night in America on Sunday, and he was doing all the possibilities of playoff scenarios, and he was rolling up the sleeves like he did on election night. So Steve Kornacki will join us coming up next hour. McLevin, what other poll questions are we looking at?
Well, at some point we have to talk about that debacle last night. Is there a team in worse shape than the Dallas Cowboys? I guess you could narrow it down to the NFC East, but as Troy Aikman said, there is not a bright place to look for this franchise.
Yeah, Troy said, I mean, I don't know. I just don't know where this organization, where they go. There are just so many things that have to be addressed this offseason. You know what? The harsh reality of this is Mike McCarthy should not be your head coach. Okay? I'd start there. Now, it's tough for, you know, Jerry Jones after the sleepover with Mike McCarthy to go, this is a one and done. You've spent a lot of money. You spent a lot of money on everybody, including that defense. And last I looked, defense seems a little healthier. You know, the offense lost some offensive linemen, and they, of course, lost Dak Prescott. But that defense is embarrassing. The Cowboys have allowed 290 yards or more in a game just once in their history coming into this season. They've done it twice in the last nine games. The Browns did it, and now the Ravens last night. Dallas is last in the NFL, allowing about 168 yards per game. Okay. I got to hold people accountable. And Jerry usually gives his coaches way, way too much breathing room here. As bad and as desperate as he is to win a title, man, I'd be cracking down and saying, what the hell am I doing here? Like, Mike McCarthy doesn't inspire you to do anything. Yeah, see.
But he just smashed that watermelon. Yes, but he was inspiring everyone by smashing the watermelon. That didn't last very long,
It didn't. But, yeah, man. I mean, because I could see Lombardi doing that. Tom Landry, Chuck Knoll,
Bill Huge melon smashers.
Yes, guys, yeah. Yes. They should be smashing somebody's melon that's in their helmet to say, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah.
This is embarrassing. The Cowboys are embarrassing. Accountability. And by the way, Leighton Vander Esch, nice story. You know, nice story.
Uh-oh.
But if Lamar Jackson has the ball on third down, he's not passing it. He's not. When I know, and I'm just watching, that he's going to keep the ball, and Leighton Vander Esch got paid by all counts. He's a good linebacker. Lamar Jackson had more rushing attempts last night than completions. I'll let him pass. I can't let him run. Yes, he.
Watching the Ravens, especially last night, it was like the one game that everybody at home turned into Tony Romo. I think he's going to run here. And more times than not, you're right. I think he's going to run here.
I know. I was watching the game by myself where I could have yelled out, you know, to my wife, they're going to run the ball.
I'd watch out for Lamar here. Yeah. I think he's going to run it.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Andy Staples covers college football for The Athletic, host of the Andy Staples Show podcast. He joins us on the program. Why was this game canceled, Andy, Ohio State and Michigan?
Well, we knew Michigan had some COVID issues, and we knew that last week. And as soon as Michigan paused last week, you had a feeling this was going to happen, because when these things happen, they tend to take out a couple of games. And that was the issue. What shocks me is the Big Ten was not creating some sort of contingency plan to figure out what was going to happen with the Big Ten title game, because as the rules currently stand, Ohio State will not be eligible. Now, what's funny about this, or none of it's funny, but what's crazy about this is if Ohio State just lost this Saturday, they would be eligible to play in the Big Ten title game, because then they would have played six games, which is the minimum requirement, and they would have the head-to-head win against Indiana, so they would just go in. But no, the Big Ten, in its infinite wisdom, decided there had to be a fixed number of games as the minimum to make the title game. None of the other leagues did that, because the other leagues are a lot smarter than the Big Ten on every single front this whole year.
Are they talking about changing that rule? I mean, this is a fluid situation, as I mentioned about 15 minutes ago, and it feels like everything's on the table. Barry Alvarez was a big proponent in, hey, it doesn't matter how many games, you know, you need to qualify for the Big Ten title, but that was when Wisconsin was still in the race. Now it's Ohio State. Do you think they're going to make accommodations for them to play in the Big Ten title game, no matter, even if they don't play another game?
I think they should. And my co-host, Ari Wasserman, on the podcast had a great point. Ohio State and Northwestern have already clinched their spots in the title game. Just have them play on Saturday. Shuffle the schedule around, have them play Saturday, and then have everybody play some other games next week. Because at this point, we already know Ohio State is the best team in the Big Ten East. So what are we doing here? Why not just have them play in the title game? There is no reason that they had that six-game arbitrary number. They didn't need to do that. And you've seen other leagues do some things to help their teams. I mean, the ACC a few weeks ago shuffled their schedule so that Notre Dame and Clemson would have a bye week before the championship game. Why not do something to help one of your teams? That has bothered me the entire time about the Big Ten. They've done nothing to help any of these teams. Like when Nebraska loses a game and they try to schedule Chattanooga, the Big Ten's like, no, you can't do that. And Nebraska said when that got canceled, hey, you know, our teams might need to get some other games for playoff consideration or just to have enough games to play. This might be a little short-sighted. And the Big Ten office response was like fart noise, basically.
Is Ohio State actively looking for an opponent for this weekend?
Well, they're not going to bring in a non-conference opponent because they're not allowed to. And ideally, I mean, if we really wanted to just have the best matchup, if, you know, we should have learned something from Coastal Carolina and BYU. Because last week, Coastal Carolina loses this game against Liberty because Liberty had COVID issues. And they go, hey, BYU, you said any team, anytime, anywhere. So how about Conway, South Carolina on some teal turf on 2 days' notice? And guess what? BYU got that big semi rolling from Provo, and it crossed the country, and they played what might have been the most fun game of the season. So here's what I suggest. Greg Sankey from the SEC, Kevin Warren from the Big Ten, get on the phone, get on a Zoom call, and get Texas A&M, which had its game against Ole Miss canceled this weekend, get them to Columbus, because the SEC would love for Texas A&M to have a way to prove that it's better than Ohio State, because they're behind Ohio State in the playoff standings right now.
Yeah, but Ohio State doesn't have to play another game, and they're in the Final Four right now. The only way they get knocked out would be if Florida beats Alabama. Mm-hmm. Clemson beats Notre Dame. You know, it feels like Ohio State's going to be in the Final Four without – I mean, they kept him in there, Andy, without even playing the Michigan game. So I don't know if it matters if they beat Northwestern that all of a sudden we go, oh, my God. And if I'm Ohio State, I'm not giving A&M a chance to leapfrog us.
Oh, of course not. But that's what I would like to see as a viewer. No, Ohio State is in the playoff at this point, no matter what. And that is more the fault of the conferences for deciding to keep the playoff as is this year. You know, there's no data cross-conference other than three Sun Belt teams beating three Big 12 teams. There, we don't know which conference is better. So we have this conversation about the Pac-12. Well, the Pac-12 is the weakest Power 5 league. How do you know that? They haven't played anybody outside the Pac-12 this year. So my suggestion was, just for this year, you need to expand the playoffs so that all the Power 5 champs get in, the highest-ranked Group of 5 champ gets in, two at-larges, which is what they're going to expand it to later anyway. But why not do that? Because it really isn't fair to the Big 12 or to the Pac-12 or to the highest-ranked Group of 5 champ, if that's Cincinnati, that they're not going to have a chance. It is eye test, eye test, eye test. And look, if you asked me or if you asked a Vegas line maker who's the fourth best team, Ohio State is a very reasonable answer. And I want to see Ohio State in the playoff. I just would rather it be done differently this year because we have no out-of-conference data to compare.
He's Andy Staples. He covers college football for The Athletic and hosts the Andy Staples Show podcast. Jim Harbaugh not being able to play this game, does it mean anything for his, like, what is his future there?
I don't know. And you've heard all these rumors about an extension. My feeling is if you extend Jim Harbaugh now, and his situation is unique in college football because he's got 1 year left on his contract. He typically does not play the same game that other coaches do where their agents come in after a good year and say, well, you got to extend my guy. He needs to have 5 years on his deal. You know, Jim Harbaugh goes double digit wins 3 of his first 4 years. Most places he's getting 5 years tacked onto the end of his deal. That didn't happen. So now he's going into next year as the last year on his contract. I'm guessing you probably don't want that to happen. So you either have to decide, do you want to keep him or do you move on? And my feeling would be move on, because your goal at Michigan is to win Big Ten titles. Your goal is to beat Ohio State. He hasn't been able to do any of those things. And in fact, it seems like it's just getting worse. So you tried. It got a little better for a while, but you never got ultimately what you wanted. Go try to find somebody who can get what you want.
Do you think this was a good thing for Michigan football? They're not playing this weekend.
I don't think it matters one way or the other. I mean, and it's sort of like the same thing with Ohio State. Would Ohio State beating this Michigan team prove anything to anyone?
No.
And we know what would happen to Michigan in this game. I mean, so I don't think it really changes anything. I don't think it changes anything for Harbaugh. I just it's crazy to me, Dan, because I was sitting there looking at my phone yesterday after the cancellation, and we've seen all kinds of weird news this year. There's just, you know, stuff we never thought would happen. And I'm looking at it, and it was the first time in a while that a story has just hit me like, oh my God, they canceled Michigan, Ohio State. Like, it just sinks in that this is just a weird, weird year.
You had a really detailed column about Texas football, and you know, there was the report or rumor that Urban Meyer might be kicking the tires there, and that his wife was looking for homes in Austin here.
Like nobody uses Zillow. You have to fly in and do it in person.
I've watched most of Texas games this year, and they could have gone the other way, and we'd be looking at, you know, Herman and saying he might be coach of the year in the Big 12, and they would be playing for the Big 12 championship. If I'm a Texas fan, am I staying with Coach Herman here, or are we looking elsewhere?
Well, the fans are ready to move on. They are ready to go. But my thing is, if you can't get an Urban Meyer, and let's think about it, how many real slam dunk hires have worked out in college football in the last 20 years? Urban Meyer did it twice at Florida and at Ohio State. I would argue that Nick Saban was a successful slam dunk hire at Alabama, and Brian Kelly was at Notre Dame. And we'll see about Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. He has a couple more years like this. We'll add him to that list. But it's a very short list. So you can't get anybody like that. If you compare the other names that we'd be talking about, whether it's Mario Cristobal or Matt Campbell, James Franklin, are they going to do any better than Herman does? I don't really know. I mean, you know, he was pretty close this year, but it's still not what you want because, you know, they lose to TCU. He's lost to TCU three times. That shouldn't happen at Texas. They lose to Iowa State with a trip to the Big 12 title game on the line. That shouldn't happen at Texas. You should have better players. And in most of those games, you should have a significant talent advantage. And then, yeah, every once in a while, somebody's going to get you. But really, it should be you and Oklahoma duking it out at the top. And that's Tom Herman's problem. It's not that he hasn't been competitive against Oklahoma, because he's been very competitive against Oklahoma. It's winning against those other teams. And the question is,
yeah, but if you're saying
$30 million,
yeah, but you want to move, or they may want to move on. Who are you getting? The same can be said about Michigan. Their fan base probably wants to move on. Who are you getting to replace? You know,
but the thing is, you can get somebody doing better than what Jim Harbaugh is doing now. You can get something better than what Jim Harbaugh has given you the last couple of years. I don't know that Texas is going to, given the current pool, get better than what they've gotten from Tom Herman, because he actually might be on a decent trajectory. Jim Harbaugh doesn't feel like he's on a good trajectory right now.
Who's winning the Heisman?
That SEC championship game is going to be a very highly watched affair among Heisman voters, because you got Mac Jones and Kyle Trask, and obviously both of them have insane talent around them. I think that's, you know, people say, well, Trevor Lawrence is the best player. Well, yes, if 32 NFL GMs voted for the Heisman, Trevor Lawrence would win in a landslide. But that's not how these things usually work. And so you have to say, well, is Mac Jones doing this because he's great, or because of Devontae Smith? Is Kyle Trask doing this because he's great, or because of Kyle Pitts? I think that game will probably decide it, which quarterback plays better. If one quarterback just has a disaster of a game, it's probably going to the other guy. Or if they just have a duel for the ages, I think the one who comes out on top probably winds up winning it.
By the way, how's the Pac-12 doing?
They are still playing. They played some Sunday football. I watched USC Washington State on Sunday. It was great.
I thought it was a rear. I swear to God, I flipped through and I go, oh, you know what? Let me watch a little bit of this game from Saturday. Wait. Oh, no, this is actually – oh, okay. Like it was tap me on the shoulder and say we're playing football on Sunday. Of course you are.
Well, it's interesting because the Pac-12 may have bungled this all worse than the Big Ten, because really until the Big Ten said they're playing again, the Pac-12 almost if they hadn't even thought of the possibility of trying to play this season. And so it doesn't look good. They're hardly getting any games in, but at least they've been flexible. That's the one thing. They have tried to be very flexible. They created a Cal Washington game on 2 days notice and played that on a Sunday. And if you're the Big Ten, you should look at that and say, well, we could probably figure out a solution to this Ohio State issue and get them another game if we just be a little creative like they've been. But the Big Ten is not that aircraft carrier does not turn around very well.
Andy, great to talk to you, and we'll be reading. We'll be watching. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Hour two on this Wednesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Spent a lot of time first hour talking about the Ohio State and what's next. Playing for the Big Ten Championship? Maybe. If not, no big deal. Still feels like they're going to be in the Final Four when it's all said and done. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp at danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at dpshow. I have a podcast, another podcast. It's called That Scene with Dan Patrick on Amazon Music. And if you thought you knew everything about Breaking Bad, think again, because my guest is Bryan Cranston, a.k.a. Walter White, and I even stumped him on a couple of items from Breaking Bad. But you can download the podcast. And next week, we have Ralphie, Peter Billingsley, Ralphie from A Christmas Story. And they're about a half hour, a lot of fun, and we take you behind the scenes of some famous scenes in these movies or in these TV shows. So it's on Amazon Music. By the way, if you're looking for a great gift for Christmas, danpatrick.com. We got T-shirts, hoodies, we got coffee mugs, flannel shirts, you name it. One-stop shop. And you have until, I believe, the 18th of this month to order to get it in time for Christmas. Also, the calendar is on there as well. We'll get to phone calls coming up. The NFL knew that they would have to be ready for anything this year, but to pull a player like Dez Bryant before last night's nationally televised game and then let him go on a tweet storm that wasn't in any commissioner's handbook, the Ravens receiver was fired up. He was going to face his former team. Fox had a story about Dez. In fact, Dez Bryant was pulled off the field, wasn't going to play, and they still ran the feature on Dez Bryant. Bryant said that he was going to go home and drink some wine and probably not play football the rest of this year. I guess that's a logical response to an illogical season when you think about it. And I'm not sure how the NFL justified playing the game while others were moved back because of contact tracing. We'll have to see what happens when all the facts come out. But the Ravens managed to play and beat the Cowboys. They roughed them up. They ran for nearly 300 yards. And the audience got to watch a relatively entertaining game. But you can't help but watch the Cowboys. And I know we overrate the Cowboys. Everything about the Cowboys is overrated. And you have a defense that there are guys who got paid on that defense. I can give a hall pass to the offense with Dak Prescott out and the offensive line has had injuries. Okay, you still have some weapons on the offense. You still have Zeke Elliott that everybody keeps telling me, yep, they made a smart move in re-signing him. All right. But the defense, that's where I would have heads rolling. I just want accountability. If I'm Jerry Jones, I just want accountability. Just who's responsible? And I would be making moves here because I got to get somebody's attention here. You're the Cowboys, and you're playing like you're the Jaguars. In fact, Jacksonville's more competitive probably week in and week out than the Cowboys are. Got a lot of guys who got paid, and you'd never know it when you watch that team. Yes, McLovin?
After the game and the post game, the Fox guys started diving into that topic about whether the Cowboys would take another quarterback at four.
Yeah.
Even though they all love Dak Prescott, they think he's great. But do you need like a fresh start there anyway? If you're four, what do you do?
You have to be absolutely positively sure of drafting a quarterback that they can play for you right away because Dallas is built to win right now. Spent all this money, they're built to win right now. This isn't one of those, hey, we got a 2 or 3 year period here, because they don't. They could have signed Dak 18, 19 months ago. They screwed that up. And now here they are, a bad football team. And just the thought that they would be thinking about a quarterback. If you said I could have, you know, Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, then I would certainly reconsider what my game plan was going to be moving forward. Because then I get the rookie contract at that position, and then I can afford to bring in a couple more players that might actually be worthy of a contract. But other than that, I think Jerry Jones knows he's stuck with these salaries and reputations, and bring Dak back and see what you have. Yes, McLovin.
One analogy I was thinking about, Drew Brees hurt his shoulder, and they drafted Phillip Rivers at four and kept Brees around. Is there any reason to pay Dak $40 million and still draft a quarterback just to see, make sure he gets back to where he was? Or Is that a waste of resources?
Before I get ready to pay him $40 million, I'm going to know if he can play. And if he can play, I don't want to waste a draft pick up there. Like, you have other needs. And if your offensive line is not going to be what it once was, then I gotta make a move. I can trade out of four and probably have somebody go up who wants to get one of these quarterbacks. And then maybe I can start to reload, not rebuild, but reload the offensive line. But I just have question marks about what kind of effort does that Dallas team put forward? I mean, this is, they've given up 290 yards twice this year in a game. Last night and the Cleveland Browns. They've done that one other time in franchise history. Mike Nolan's defense is not working. Mike McCarthy is not the right guy for that position. But I don't think Jerry is going to make any changes with Mike McCarthy, and he would be one and done. We wondered why he was brought in the first place. As I said, when they brought him in, it's not like he's Lombardi and bringing him in. I mean, they could have stayed with Jason Garrett and gotten this performance. But you brought in Mike McCarthy, and you're like, yes, we got Mike McCarthy. Was anybody else bidding for Mike McCarthy? And if I'm Jerry Jones, you know what I do? I surprise everybody. And I say, I want to bring in Eric Bieniemy as my head coach. I'm going to take him off everybody else's list because it feels like there are three or four, maybe five teams that would bring in Eric Bieniemy. How about I go get him and I have him as my head coach here with Dallas? I know it'll never happen, but you got to get something. You're stagnant. You're boring. You're irrelevant. Those are things you would never, those words you don't attach to the Dallas Cowboys, but that's what they are. Yeah, McLovin.
I can think of a rah-rah coach who might be available. He wears khakis.
Jim Harbaugh?
Jim Harbaugh, Dallas? Wait. I've never seen it written at all, by the way.
No. But, you know, I saw a report where five teams are interested in Jim Harbaugh if he decides he goes to the NFL. I don't know if one of those teams would be Dallas. Would the Detroit Lions be interested in Jim Harbaugh? I mean, that would be the ultimate, hey, he's not going to coach at Michigan, but he's staying in the state. He's going to be the Detroit Lions head coach. Yes, Paul.
Going back to the draft order right now after last night's game is Jets number one, Jacksonville two, Cincinnati three. They don't need a quarterback. Dallas right now is in the fourth spot for the NFL draft. Then the Chargers, and then the Philadelphia Eagles in the sixth spot. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I think the Eagles got to decide what they have on their own roster right now. But if you said, these teams can trade out of this. Cincinnati doesn't need it. Jacksonville does, and the Jets do. And then you get to Dallas. If I'm Dallas, I can use this to my advantage being really bad, get out of there, and then still be able to stockpile a little bit. The Chargers don't need a quarterback. Philadelphia's got to decide if they have a legitimate starting quarterback there. Carolina looks like they would be in the market for a quarterback. What's Atlanta do with Matt Ryan? Houston doesn't need a quarterback. Although that pick goes to Miami. Denver, I don't know what Denver's doing. Washington, they would be in the market for a quarterback. Detroit, Chicago. Even San Francisco's in there. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are going to be interested in a quarterback. But, you know, with Dallas, they need other things. Here's Mike McCarthy on what the Cowboys didn't do enough of last night.
300 yards is obviously astronomical. You know, we have to get a quick turnaround. You know, just when you feel like you're taking some steps as a team, the keys to the game was stopping a run, and we definitely didn't get that done tonight.
Don't I hear this every game? It feels like. All right, here is John Harbaugh, the Ravens head coach, on his star quarterback Lamar Jackson.
One thing you do know about Lamar, you're going to get everything he's got, you know, and that's really all you can ask for. He's going to give you whatever he has, and it turned out that he had a lot tonight, and that was good to see. I don't think you could predict that. He came out to practice. He looked good in practice. He was strong and healthy. I'm just impressed with the fact that he was on top of the game plan so well. he'd been studying, obviously, the whole time he's away, and he played a great football game.
Yeah, he did. But it helps if you have a Dallas defense that is clueless, because when I can play the role of amateur Tony Romo watching the game and going, oh, Lamar's going to run. Third down, Lamar's going to run. If I know, I would think that the Dallas defense would know as well. I'm going to let Lamar Jackson, if Lamar Jackson beats me with his arm, okay. But I'm not going to let him beat me with his legs, where he's far more valuable. Yes, yeah,
dude. I'm just impressed he knew the game plan so well.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
What is that? Like, yeah, is that kind of what you expect from your quarterback? Like, hey, how about him? He knew what we were doing this week, huh? That was impressive. Like, what? That didn't sound like much of a compliment to me.
Jerry Jones on Tuesday morning did his weekly interview on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. And had some things to say. He talked about how Washington and the Giants are playing well and what that means to Jerry Jones and the Cowboys.
I think it's an encouraging sign, Mike, to see these teams, these new coaches, these new staffs, these new, directions that they're going, and see them playing some better football as we saw the last two or three days.
I'm not interested in Jerry Jones necessarily Tuesday morning. I'm really interested in Jerry Jones on Wednesday morning. That's when I want to hear from Jerry Jones. Here's Jerry talking about Dak Prescott moving forward with his running skills.
I've always handicapped, to some degree, Dak because of the fact that he's so effective and has been in his career. Running in the running game, and his ability to take it down and get the big play and get the yards. I've always known that he couldn't do that like that for long in the NFL.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. The Duttons are back. Yellowstone Season 3 starring Kevin Costner, streaming now exclusively on Peacock. Whether you're a newcomer to the ranch or season pro, you don't want to miss. Stream all three seasons right now on Peacock. Get some phone calls in here. By the way, he was one of the stars on election night, NBC News political correspondent Steve Kornacki, and he was a star on Football Night in America this past Sunday as he was looking at teams. You know, there were teams that look like they have a better chance of making the playoffs, and Steve's job is to look at the odds and the percentages, and he had some teams that aren't in the playoff picture right now, but he feels like they have a better chance than some of those who are in, and he'll join us coming up. Also, Paul Feinbaum from the Mothership will join us a little bit later on with what's going on with college football. Yes, Paul?
You know, Steve Kornacki is kind of like McLovin's bit where, but when Steve Kornacki does it, everything goes right and everything is smooth and the TV works and all the things he swipes, they work perfectly. McLovin, if he were the guy going through the playoff thing, the TV would fall over. He'd have the wrong, you'd hit like the CFL logos up there. And that's the only difference between the two. They both know it, but it would go totally different.
So he'll join us coming up. Some phone calls here. Are we going to stay with the poll question, McLovin, about Ohio State?
Actually, it's 64% say no, they're not okay with Ohio State being the Final Four. How about we do a question, what's the next team to take, or who's taking the third quarterback, and list all those teams you talk about? Assuming the first two are Jets and Jaguars, then you listed all those teams. It seems like there's seven quarterback needy teams in the top 10. I'm curious who people think. Mm-hmm. Dallas, Philly, Atlanta, Detroit?
Atlanta and Detroit are interesting. Because I thought Detroit, you know, if you had a more stable coaching staff, I think they would have taken Tua Tagovailoa. But Matt Patricia and his staff, from what I was told, they knew they had to win this year, they were going to be fired, and they got fired. As far as what's going on in Atlanta, you're going to have a new head coach. Is Matt Ryan going to stay there? Julio Jones going to stay there? Do you rebuild? Do you think you can reload? Tampa and New Orleans are the class of the division there. So I'm not quite sure. But also, I wonder, as we look at these quarterbacks who are going to be up for these big contract extensions, given what happened with Carson Wentz and that contract, do I give a big contract to Lamar Jackson? Do I give a big contract to Baker Mayfield? Do I give a big contract to Josh Allen? And I think man, I buyer beware with what has happened with Carson Wentz. Because if you can't get the Colts to trade for him or maybe somebody else, you're going to be stuck with that contract. Buffalo, it feels like they will extend Josh Allen. But look at the going rate for quarterbacks. I mean, they're going to be getting at least 35 to 37, maybe even more, a year. You want to do that to Baker Mayfield? You want to do that to Lamar Jackson? You want to do it to Josh Allen? These are questions that you're going to have. These teams are going to have. But I think Buffalo will do that with Josh Allen. I'm going to guess Baltimore will do it with Lamar Jackson. I don't know if Cleveland's going to do that with Baker Mayfield. I mean, it might come down to how Baker performs this year and how they do in the playoffs. Let me see. A couple of phone calls. Jonathan in Pennsylvania. Hey, Jonathan, what do you have for me today?
Hey, DP.
Hey.
I've been a fan of your for a long time. And I got to say, you know, we talk about the Cowboys so many times and it's overrated and all that. As a Cowboys fan myself, you know, you talk about Jerry Jones, what he should think that he should do. For me, Jerry Jones ain't going to do nothing. He's not going to do no moves, no nothing, because he is the owner and he is the GM. And he's definitely not going to do anything to help out the Cowboys at all. He is the biggest. He has money all around. But he's never going to do anything. Never.
Well, but the problem is, though, Jonathan, he tries. And sometimes he gets into his own way. Understand that they were taking Connor Cook. That was the quarterback they were going to take out of Michigan State. They weren't taking Dak Prescott. They were taking Connor Cook. And then the Raiders took Connor Cook. They wouldn't even have Dak Prescott. Jerry, the GM, Jerry, the owner, they toyed with the idea of taking Johnny Manziel. Amari Cooper got $100 million. You re-sign, re-up Zeke Elliott? I mean, those are all Jerry's moves. And I can credit him for some of the fines that they've had or that, you know, they did draft correctly. But Jerry, the owner, and Jerry, the GM, those are two different people. And Dallas paid everybody. Everybody got paid. And then they weren't quite sure on Dak. I don't know about Dak. I don't know about Dak. And then they waited 18 months. And here we are. Yes, Eden.
But dang, man, you can't figure out a way to get the ball to either CeeDee Lamb or Amari Cooper? Like, it doesn't feel like it should be that hard to figure out a decent offense with the weapons they have.
I don't know what their offensive game plan is. Because and I know Andy Dalton's in there and it's not Dak Prescott. It's not that far of a drop-off between Dak Prescott and Andy Dalton. No? I mean, it's not like Joe Namath to Chad Pennington. Yes, McClellan.
How do you throw the ball to CeeDee Lamb or Amari Cooper when you're on the sidelines for 11 minutes watching the other team gash you for 8 yards a run? Yeah. Run, if you can't stop the run, your quarterback is doomed because he never gets a rhythm. And by the way, Andy threw for 300 last night. No big deal.
You're right. It was no big deal.
Yeah. 170 was in garbage time, but whatever. Yeah. No, we're not counting. It's the only total number.
No big deal. No big deal. All right, let me take a break. We'll get to phone calls. Got a lot of people want to talk college football as well. Steve Kornacki, the NBC News political correspondent, will join us and talk to him about his appearance on Football Night in America. And he'll run the percentages here of teams that maybe you don't think are going to make the playoffs, but he thinks they have a better chance than you do. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Steve Kornacki is the national political correspondent for NBC News, MSNBC, NBC News, the election map expert. And it feels like you became an overnight sensation, but took you a long time to become an overnight sensation. Steve, thanks for joining us. What do people say to you when they see you on the street?
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here. I guess one of the things about life in the pandemic is you don't see too many people on the street. So the few I've run into, though, the map guy, the numbers guy, you know, still a few every now and then they'll say, hey, it's Chris Hayes. So I still get that.
How do you become the election map expert?
You know, honestly, it's something it's a role I kind of always wanted. It's one that's kind of, I think, come into being in the last 20 years or so. It's funny when I go back and look at, I love looking at kind of archive, archive news footage, archive sports footage. I like looking at stuff from the past. I realized, you know, just 20 years ago, back in 2000, you know, Tim Russert was here at NBC and, you know, the famous moment in the 2000 election when it all came down to Florida, a couple hundred votes. Russert didn't have an electronic board. He had a whiteboard and he just wrote down Florida, Florida, Florida. And I think that's in the Smithsonian now, but I mean, that was technology just 20 years ago. So this, you know, the idea of having a board with real-time data with numbers, it's really come in the last 10, 15 years. But, you know, since it's kind of been around, I had my eye on it and I got lucky about, it was 2014, actually. 2014, my boss here called me up about 2 months before the election, said, hey, we need somebody to do this. You think you could do something with it? I said, yeah, I think I could. So that was the start of it for me.
How do you memorize all the counties?
You know, I think it's just good old fashioned, you know, staring at it, memorizing it, repeating it, pulling out the map, trying again. You know, it helps. I haven't been to all these places. I've not been to more counties than I've been to. But, you know, one thing in the last 6 years, I vacationed in Ohio about 2 years ago just to learn the state, to learn the counties, to get a better sense of it that way. That helps, but obviously I haven't done that anywhere. So really it's like cramming for a final. It's just memorization and repetition in it. The memory kind of builds.
Who's better on the touch screen, you or John King?
Oh, come on. John King's the original. And you know, nothing but respect for him. And honestly, I haven't seen a CNN election night since I've been doing this, cause there's no time to watch it. So I'm not qualified to say.
You're kind of like, Lamar Jackson and he's Michael Vick. Like he might have been the original, and then you're an updated version of it.
And he's still doing it. Hey, and Fox has someone doing it, and I don't want to get into anything with anybody. I try not to make enemies.
How did you end up on Football Night in America?
You know, I got a call about a week after the election from my boss here saying the folks at NBC Sports wanted to talk to me, had a couple ideas. I was very excited to hear that, and you know, so we'd been talking for about 2 weeks before it and, came up with the idea, I think, that, hey, this is December in the NFL. It's when the playoff race really gets serious. And I think it seemed like there really was a parallel there between road to 270 and an electoral map for a presidential election and road to the playoffs. It's all about scenarios. It's all about if this state goes this way or if this team does this, there really did seem to be an overlap there.
Give me a couple of teams that aren't maybe being mentioned as playoff teams, but you think they have a better chance than maybe a couple of teams that we think are going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is now too counterintuitive watching the game last night. I know they were talking about this a lot, but Baltimore, you know, sitting there right now at 7-5 would not be in the playoffs if they started today. If you just look at their schedule, they get Cleveland next week, and after that, it's three teams with losing records. You know, so they've got a really easy schedule down the stretch. It's not hard to see them getting, you know, to 10 wins. And you compare that like to Miami, who would be in right now in the sixth spot. You know, Miami, a game ahead of Baltimore in the standings, sitting there at 8-4. Miami doesn't have a single game left against a team with a losing record. I mean, starting with Kansas City next week. So, you know, the sort of the burden's on Miami to show they can hang on to that position against the kind of competition they're taking. And it just seems like the opportunity is there for Baltimore to leapfrog a bunch of teams here just based on that schedule.
When did you become fascinated with numbers?
You know, it was when I was in first grade. It was the, I could tell you, it was the 1985-86 NBA season. I grew up outside Boston. I would go outside, get the Boston Globe every morning and read the Celtics box scores. And that was the best Celtics team ever. That was the big three, Bird, McHale, Parrish, and Celtics box scores that season. And then summer of 86 was the Red Sox. That was the, you know, with the Buckner year. So the Red Sox were a thing that year. I got into baseball box scores and, that kind of started numbers for me. And then a couple of years later, kind of got into politics really about middle school and kind of the numbers aspect of it too, I guess.
But the pressure on election night is different. Like you can be on Football Night in America and you might make a mistake and it's Football Night in America, but election night, how much pressure did you feel?
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, there's a lot there. And this year was more intense because there's just this added variable this year of people were voting by mail, and we knew the people voting by mail were going to be overwhelmingly Biden. And the people who were going out, you know, and voting in person at their precinct on election day, we knew that was going to be pretty heavily Trump. And there was just this variable as the numbers would come in from a lot of places of, okay, are we looking at votes that were cast by mail here? Are we looking at votes that were cast in person today? Are we looking at a mix of both? Because that question in trying to be on top of that information was key to understanding everything that was happening. And that was just something, there's no, at a certain level, there's no preparing for it because we'd never had that before in an election. And so, yeah, I felt, I always feel a lot of anxiety before these things. This year I felt about 10 times more than I have in the past.
How do you come off as unbiased?
I mean, it's probably a cliche, but the numbers don't lie. You know, at a certain point, and you know, I can, if I have a, it's true in sports, it's true covering politics. If you're cheering for a team in sports, you know, there's no denying if they lose 17-14, there's no time left on the clock, then they've lost, the game's over. You got to talk about the next game. You know, I think the same is true in, you know, covering an election. It wouldn't do me any good to be trying to, you know, kind of push it to one side or to push it to the other as the numbers come in, because they are going to ultimately all come in and we'll all be able to see what it is.
What happens if the touch screen goes down? What was the game plan?
It's happened before. It's how I made the Tonight Show for the first time in my life. This was in the 2016 election. I was doing a segment and the board went blank, completely blank, but the writing function on it, you know, with my finger still worked and the camera's still rolling. Nobody's telling me to stop. So I'm like, I got to improvise here. And we were talking about sort of, you know, road to 270. So I said, okay, I'll draw a crude outline of the United States, and I can kind of talk about the different regions. So I tried to draw the United States, and it turned out it looked like part of the Mayo reproductive anatomy. Jimmy Fallon noticed it. That was my first, you say overnight fame or something. That was my first taste of it.
Okay, but how do you react to something like that? I know you, I think you majored in TV and film at Boston University, but you know, now I'm famous and I'm infamous. And so how do you process that?
Yeah, the thing about that was like, I didn't even realize it till things started popping up online. I really didn't think I had done anything. And then it was one of those, it was obvious. Once I saw it, I was like, okay, I see how everybody saw that. And of course I was on with one of my colleagues here, Hallie Jackson. And I think, you know, she was standing next to me the whole time. And you could see when you look at the tape, she recognized it the whole time. And certain, when something like that happens, my view is it's like, just own it. And, you know, I kind of stepped in it and I'm not going to make excuses for it. I'll just, you know, I'll laugh along with everybody because it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, it's best to grab it and own it before somebody else does. I always tell people then, and this has happened to me on numerous occasions, you make a mistake, own it. And then you take away the weapon that somebody else has when they're going to point that out. So you did the right thing where you just go, hey, I did it. I move on. Yeah.
And I think you're right. And that's what I try to do when it's a little bit more serious than a drawing like that. You know, we've gotten numbers wrong. We've gotten, you know, we'll get vote returns that come in and it turns out there's corrections and they change completely. And yeah, no, I do think that's key with the audience just in terms of credibility. Don't try to pretend if you made a fool of yourself, don't try to pretend you didn't.
Based on the numbers, who would you put in the Super Bowl? Can you do something that far out of projection?
I guess this would be the Steve Kornacki gut numbers, because I haven't seen the updated, you know, our partner is PFF, Pro Football Focus, and I haven't seen their updated numbers after last night, but just my gut on it would be Kansas City, you know, in the AFC. And I think, you know, probably conventional wisdom at this point. In the NFC, I'm kind of liking the way Green Bay's playing right now.
Okay. Well, wait, is this based off anything or is this is your gut feeling?
This is my gut feeling, okay. And it's also a sense of where the numbers, I haven't seen the updates, but my guess is between Pittsburgh losing, you know, Kansas City hanging out against Denver, my sense is the numbers are going to shift pretty dramatically in the AFC here.
Give me your favorite county in the United States.
That's a good question. My favorite county, well, I got to be partial to Middlesex County, Massachusetts, where I was born.
Is there a favorite name of a county that you loved saying?
There's Otagamie County in Wisconsin, which has one of the, you know, the funny, Wisconsin has the best county names, you know, There's also, you know, where Ann Arbor is in Michigan, Washtenaw County. You know, when you get to the upper Midwest, I think you get a lot of those, you know, sort of Native American names, and you get those are the ones where sometimes I, in my early days of doing this, I would call the when I wasn't sure in the pronunciation on the day of an election, I would just call up like the county clerk's office just to see how they answered the phone. And that would be my answer.
Yeah, that's what's difficult, is just making sure, because I always point out that there was a movie, The Thomas Crown Affair, with Pierce Brosnan. And they mention in the movie that somebody is from Lima, Ohio. Well, it's Lima, Ohio. And if you're from that area, you're like, how could you screw that up? So you have to make sure you get it right. We might not know the county you're talking about, but the people who live in that county know the county you're talking about.
The locals do, and some of them are very, you know, counterintuitive. You go down, like, where San Antonio is in Texas, it looks like Bexar County. It's Bexar County, B-E-X-A-R, and it's Bexar County. That one took me a while to learn.
Hey, congrats on the success there, Steve, and hopefully we'll see you on football. Are you doing Football Night in America now the rest of the regular season?
Yeah, it sounds like we're going to do it through the rest of the season. You know, follow the playoff race, look at the numbers change, and it's very excited for it.
All right, just be careful what you draw, okay?
Yeah, thanks. I think I learned my lesson there.
Thank you, Steve. That's Steve Kornacki. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Paul Feinbaum, ESPN radio host, and he hosts a show called The Paul Feinbaum Show, which is convenient because he's Paul Feinbaum, the voice of the SEC. Paul, thanks for joining us. What would you do if you're Ohio State this weekend?
I would call Michael Bublé for advice. I would hope that right now, Dan, and you, I know you have a lot better sources in the Big Ten than I do, that the Big Ten athletic directors are currently meeting and find a game for them. I think finding a game, and I heard you mention that a minute ago, is better than just saying, okay, you don't have to play this weekend, but you're in the Big Ten championship game anyway. It really isn't that complicated. I don't think this is, you know, they're hanging on you know, Marbury versus Madison is case law from 203 years ago. I mean, they've made up everything they've done so far. So why not make up another week of worth of rules?
But also I saw where on social media and some people have suggested Ohio State and Texas A&M. And I thought, well, if I'm Ohio State, why am I giving Texas A&M a chance to maybe leapfrog us if they would happen to beat us? Ohio State's already in the Final Four. Texas A&M is going to be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, I mean, other than the fact that we all yearn for a quality football game this weekend, which we are not overly going to be filled with that in terms of voracious appetites. There really isn't a reason. It's just for fun. You know, it's a play-in game, but you're absolutely right. Ohio State will probably be in the playoffs as long as they have a game next weekend, and they'll either play Northwestern or Wisconsin or someone, and at 6-0, they will pass mustard. I mean, if the committee didn't think they were worthy, they wouldn't be number four.
Yeah.
And that's where they are right now.
Yeah. How do you see this playing out?
I think we'll have a resolution today.
No, yeah, as far as the playoffs. So your four teams, do you think will be who?
Yeah. I'm still thinking of Michael Bublé, and when I saw that Steve Kornacki was on before me, I'm kind of wanted to go run. So here's the deal. I'd say it's Alabama. I think Clemson will be Notre Dame, so Clemson gets in there. I think Notre Dame will still get in there, and it will be Ohio State, just like we ordered it before the season.
Can Florida beat Alabama?
I think it would take an extraordinary set of circumstances, and I don't see that happening. Right now, Dan, Alabama looks unbeatable to me. I mean, they are so potent on offense, and the biggest change is on defense. After the Ole Miss game 2 months ago, they were ready to fire the defensive coordinator. It looked like Saban was too, and they have really shored up and gotten extremely stingy. And on top of that, it's just an embarrassment of riches on the offensive side. Alabama has three guys that you could make a compelling case to win the Heisman Trophy. In Devontae Smith, the wide receiver, Najee Harris, who doesn't who might as well be in missing persons right now in the witness protection program. You don't really hear about him at all. And he's one of the, he may be the best running back in the country. And obviously Mac Jones, who is a co-favorite with Kyle Trask to win the whole thing.
You start to look at this Alabama team, and when was the evolution of the offensive side of things for Nick Saban? Because he used to run the football and play great defense, but then it felt like, hey, he looked around and said, I kind of have to, if I'm going to get these skilled position players and they all want to go to the NFL and I'm going to compete with some of these other outliers in the SEC or playing great offense. Was there a moment where it changed for Nick Saban and his philosophy?
Yeah, it came really around 2013, 2014. Nick Saban thought he could influence the College Football Rules Committee and slow the game down. The hurry-up was killing him. His defenses were not prepared for it. And you know, he lost a national championship that year on the famous kick six play. And he decided, you know what, I don't think I can beat this, so I'm going to join. And he hired Lane Kiffin. There is no getting around. Lane Kiffin was the reason Alabama entered the modern era in offense, and Kiffin changed it. He helped in recruiting immensely. Kiffin played a huge role in Tua Tagovailoa coming to Alabama and a number of other players. And then, you know, Kiffin from there, Sark came in. Brian Daboll, by the way, was in between, and he was not particularly liked at Alabama, although he's now quite well respected in the NFL. And then Sark came back and just finished the job that Lane Kiffin started.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum from the Mothership, host of the Paul Feinbaum Show, the voice of the SEC. I know that, and I was told this by a source, because I said, why don't we expand the playoffs this year, given everything that's happened? Athletic departments have been decimated. Now I get 8 schools in there. I get, you know, maybe 5 or 6 teams that are at least playing important games and maybe getting a chance to get in there. But why would the SEC not be in favor of this? Because I was told that, and I thought the SEC could get half of the 8 teams in there, Paul.
It's true, but you know, the men who run these college football Power 5 conferences, Dan, please, I hope you're sitting down. I know you are. They're traditionalists, and they do not like to change. I think we're pretty lucky we have 4 teams right now, the way these guys operate things. And you're right about the SEC, but the SEC still has a legitimate shot at getting 2 in. They have 3 contending. They have 1 automatic. And, you know, they all see, I mean, we watched last August as, you know, the 5 families of college football, the Dons, could not agree on anything. You had the 3 conferences wanting to play. You had the 2 that didn't. And that is the dysfunctionality of college football. The simple things don't ever happen. And by the way, this was definitely the year to do it. Yeah. And, you know, I will, you could direct a question to my bosses at the Mothership. They do have a say in this altogether. But in the end, Dan, it should have happened. Although I will say the underbelly of it is I'm not sure how well it would have worked, because I still think the next 3 to 4 weeks is going to be a challenge to get these games in, especially with a game, the semifinal game slated for the Rose Bowl. I mean, right now, can you go out of your house in California?
Yeah, you might have to relocate to Arizona. The Fiesta Bowl would be hosting the Rose Bowl as well. Would you rather have Nick Saban on the show or Jim Harbaugh?
Jim Harbaugh. And I say that only because I've done Saban. I mean, you've interviewed Nick Saban. I mean, and he's the greatest coach of all time, but I know what he's going to say. Jim Harbaugh, I don't know. It's funny. Harbaugh is just one of the most complicated and interesting people in all of sports. But, and not that he really says interesting things, but I believe, and you may know him. I had the opportunity to get together with him about 2 years ago, set up by his brother-in-law, Tom Crean. And there were some complications, and it was my fault. I couldn't get up there. I was in California working on something. And I'm sorry that I missed it out, because I really believe deep down he's a fascinating guy. He's just not a particularly good college football coach right now.
Yeah, because that's always weird if you're – like our job is not to have preferential treatment. Like you're supposed to see it and then say it, not factor in, well, I do like this guy. And you've been brutally honest about Jim Harbaugh not being a great coach or being overrated, or I don't want to I'm paraphrasing here, but
I've said it all.
How awkward would it be, though? Like if I said, hey, Jim Harbaugh would love to meet you, and he's going to be in the area. He's going to be at the mothership, and he wants to meet with you at ESPN.
I would do it in a second. And by the way, I'm in my 60s now, Dan. I've had a career of having awkward meetings with people that did not like me. It wouldn't be the first time. So there's an art of the deal, so to speak, not to recreate a bestseller from the 80s and 90s. But I'm always willing to meet anyone. And you guys like us, we don't dislike people personally. It's just we say what we believe. It's not personal.
What's the most awkward encounter you've had in this town?
Interestingly, it was Lane Kiffin. I don't know how much time we have, but I'll tell you this quick story. I was on College game day in 2013 before they played, I think it was Arizona. And I said, if USC can't win tonight, Lane Kiffin should be fired. Well, guess what? They didn't win. And he was fired. And the next morning on SportsCenter pretty much blamed me for the firing. And I said he was the Miley Cyrus of college football. And I mean, I got so 2 weeks later, I'm out in the University of Washington doing game day. And I find out a couple hours the night before that Lane Kiffin was going to give his first interview. So I walk in the meeting, and there's Lane Kiffin, and I was a little bit cautious, so I just decided, screw it. I'm going to walk over to him. I didn't know whether he was going to throw a punch, not that I was overly concerned about getting punched out by Lane Kiffin, but I said hello. We ended up becoming fast friends. We started corresponding. He sent me a Miley Cyrus song the next day, and
a Miley Cyrus song?
Yeah, I called him the Miley Cyrus of college football coaches. So, he showed me his personality. So, I mean, after that, I'm really not afraid of anyone. But I've talked to people that I've called for their firings before. So it can be awkward, even years later. It does, to quote the oldest cliche in the business, come with the territory.
Yeah, and there are times you say something, and then you have no idea why somebody's mad at you. Or somebody will say, oh, he heard what you said. And I'll be like, I have 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and I've been doing this for over 30 years. Chances are somebody's going to be upset at something I said. You're never quite sure if they heard it or somebody related to. And usually when they relay it to somebody, it's far worse than when they hear it on their own.
I've had people come at me from 25 years ago. It wasn't that long ago, a coach that I wrote an article about when I was a newspaper writer, and he was fired. He started attacking me at an event, and I'm like going, I mean, buddy, this is at least 25 years in the past. But, you know, to that person, and it's really a lesson, these things, they never leave you, although, you know, some of them probably could use some psychiatric counseling.
Of all the fan bases, though, What's the one that's maybe most sensitive or makes you a little nervous?
I spent most of my life in Alabama, so I would never come after the Crimson Tide fans.
Or Auburn.
I have had more problems with Michigan fans because they just seem like they're everywhere. And until recently, I mean, I was about 2 years ago, I was walking down in Georgetown and a Michigan fan like came up to me and wanted to accost me. They are in another world because Michigan, even though they've won, I think, 1.5 national championships in 50 years, they still think they're elite. So when you criticize Harbaugh, until recently, when you criticize Harbaugh, they took it so personally. They still take it personally, but they don't bother me as much. But they're probably the most difficult fan base I have had to deal with.
These comments aren't going to help that situation, Paul.
The good news is I'm not traveling to Michigan.
Yeah, anytime soon. Yeah, no reason to go there. Great to talk to you, and thanks for joining us as always, Paul.
Dan, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.